Let's switch gears and talk about marijuana legislation. Lawmakers, of course, here in Connecticut right now are considering two marijuana legalization bills. One in the Senate called SB 888 got voted through Gary Winfield's Judiciary Committee this week. And your House measure, HB 6377, got through your Labor Committee, I believe, a couple of weeks ago. Where are the bills markedly different in your estimation?
Oh, wow. There are still some differences. I mean, my bill talks about, well, he did put the labor piece in there. So, you know, I focus on workforce development. We're talking about an industry that is nationally been a multi-billion dollar industry. I don't see it being any different here in Connecticut when it's up and running. And with any billion dollar industry comes thousands of jobs. So I think that there needs to be more talk around workforce development and creating jobs. And in my bill, I mandate that no less than 10% of the revenue go toward a permanent pipeline to prosperity that focuses on empowering those with adverse criminal histories, especially, right? Lifting the very communities and the people in those communities that have been detrimentally harmed by this war. And we call it a war on drugs, but I call it a war on people, black, brown, and poor people.
Sure. With regards to that aspect of it, have you seen any movement? There would seem to have been some movement in the Senate bill, the one that the governor favors, towards incorporating more equity into it. Have you seen movement that has, for lack of a better word, moved you?
Absolutely. And that's why I was able to vote yes on Senate Bill 888 when it came out of committee yesterday. Was it yesterday? I'm getting my days confused. It might have been the day before.
Me too. I'm with you.
But I did vote yes because I did see, you know, we had some victories there. You know, there was the inclusion of the tribal residents into the equity program. There is a social equity program now being defined in the governor's bill that wasn't there before. There are protections for youth from incarceration if under the age of 18. So there's a youth justice win for us there. But there are still issues with the bill, you know, even the fact that the social equity definition is being coined slave master's clause. And that's people in Illinois calling it that because it's the language that was lifted from Illinois' cannabis bill. And, you know, social equity applicants, it actually allows billion-dollar companies to come in, and as long as they hire, you know, somebody that looks like me, they could fire me the day after, but as long as they hire me, they can be considered a social equity applicant. So that's a problem. I mean, there's some things that still need to be tweaked, but yes, I definitely saw some victories in Senate Bill 888 coming out of the Judiciary Committee, still a work in progress. And I say, you know, the floor of justice was lifted, but we have a few more floors to go. And me voting yes on that bill was to ensure that we're along for the ride, that we're at the table, that we are a part of that discussion. And the main goal is to get this done and to get it done right.
With you voting for the Senate bill, what happens to HB 6377?
Oh, it's still in motion. It's still in motion. It got voted out of the Labor Committee. It was JFS to the floor. And I'm sure there'll be other committees, just like the governor's bill, that it will have to go through, finance and general law, et cetera. So it's still in play.
Well, I guess the crux of my question is there significant if they're both passed, is there significant overlap? Could they be both passed? Is there enough difference in the bills to warrant having them both in play?
I think at this point it's just, you know, keeping all options open. Like we discussed earlier, there were some victories for us in this bill that came out. You know, we didn't have the equity defined, didn't have the labor peace agreements in his bill. They're now in there. We still need to add the project labor agreements that foster local hiring. We need to talk about the workforce development that I referred to, the restitution for the detrimental damage done to communities of color and poor white communities. We need to talk about that. But my hope is that in my good gesture, that good faith gesture of voting yes on Senate Bill 888, it will bring us to a place where we can coalesce both these bills into one and that equity will lead and it will be something that we can all proudly vote on. that are interested in seeing the adult use of cannabis legalized in the state of Connecticut.
Well, you know, I saw House Minority Leader Vincent Candelora on TV last week talking about the fact that the GOP supports homegrown marijuana only. And he was also saying that he understands from medical professionals that they don't support marijuana legalization because of the adverse result in public health effects. What do you say about his homegrown and his medical effects positions?
I find it strange because, I mean, when I think back on the history of the criminalization of cannabis, back in the day, you know, cannabis was one of the top three medications that were prescribed by doctors. And when it was criminalized and coined marijuana, doctors were confused because they didn't know what marijuana was. And we know why it was called marijuana. Calling it marijuana is just like saying the N-word, if you ask me, right? It's cannabis, and that's what it's always been known as. And it's always been medicinal. So I find some conflict in that. The home grow, we definitely agree on that. I think that people should be able to grow at home. We don't tell you that you can't bring your liquor home.
Indeed. The idea that society, there will be some sort of epidemic of adverse medical effects if cannabis, not marijuana, cannabis is passed, legalized statewide. What do you make of that position?
I don't know. Who's saying that, and who stands to gain if that is the case? If the point of legalizing it the way we're doing it is to regulate it and to make it more safe, right? Because we know what people are getting on the streets are laced with things that kill you. So, yeah, that argument is a little confusing to me. If it's about regulating, then why would the medical professionals have a problem with cannabis being regulated? I would think that that would solve the issue and solve the concern that they have.
Have you seen your own data from medical professionals in that regard?
I'm sorry?
Have you seen your own data from medical professionals in that regard?
No.
Okay. With Massachusetts, New York, Maine, and New Jersey having already legalized cannabis, and with Rhode Island having effectively decriminalized it, how much pressure is there on the legislature, do you think, as a whole, as a body, to legalize cannabis sooner than later?
Well, I mean, I don't think, and I actually had a colleague say this to me one day, I don't think it should be about keeping up with the Joneses because we're already behind, right? I think that the thing that is most important, the urgency should be in getting this right, making sure that it's being led with equity. And if it's a matter of just taking care of the criminalization part of it, then let's decrim it. We can decriminalize it. That's not a problem. But the specifics, the detail, the devil is in the details. And I tell you, these details are still quite disturbing with what still is in Senate Bill 8-8. So there's a lot of work to be done. And I don't know if I believe that we can get it done in time to pass this year. But, you know, that ball is heavily latent, you know, with what the governor decides to do and where he decides to take this. If we can get to the table and work collectively, we can get it done right. And if we can't get it done right, then I'm saying we don't get it done at all, not this year. So that's how I feel about it. We waited this long, right? No need in rushing because haste makes waste. Mm-hmm. And we've been there before. We've rushed to get things done. Let's just get it done. And then we have a mess to clean up after it's been passed. So I'd rather, you know, be in a space where I know what we have and what we're dealing with than to be venturing into something that could be even worse for my communities, the you know, black and brown communities and the poor white communities. We need to heal and restore, and there should be no urgency in getting that done. We need to make sure we're getting it done right.
Couple of more questions. Just, I know you've touched on it during our conversation, but I just want to make sure I'm clear. What if you could pick one or two things that disturb you the most about SB 888, what are they?
Well, I think the thing that disturbs me the most is, and I'll start from the beginning, you know, when they testified in judiciary, they couldn't even define equity for me. But isn't that concerning? I believe the bill was an act enact responsibly and equitably regulate and adult use cannabis. They couldn't define equity. And then when they came back with the amendment, I mean, right out the gate, the way that they are defining the social equity applicant and the language that they are using and saying that, you know, as long as you have these people working for you, you can be considered a social equity applicant. That's slave master's clause. And that, like I said, that is what Illinois is calling it. Illinois just did this last year. And they are having a hell of a time, and they are very upset at the fact that they thought they had equity right. But when you start to go through the details, you find out that this isn't equity at all. And the fact that we know Illinois is having this bout with equity right now, and that we would go, and I'm not going to say we, the governors, people would go and lift language from there to put in that is being coined by Illinois, slave master's clause, that's not good. That's not a good place to start. So now we have to go through this bill, you know, detail by detail, tooth and nail, to make sure that, you know, there's no more of this bad stuff in there. And it just seems disingenuous. And I'm hoping that, you know, the conversations going forward will address this, and that there will be some, you know, they will leave room to redeem themselves from this, because this is definitely a big blotch spot on this bill. And this is the talk of the town right now. People are very upset out the gate how he's decided to define this social equity applicant piece of it.
When you say he, you mean the governor, or do you mean the governor?
The governor's people, the governor, whoever he has doing this work for him. It's the governor's office. The governor's office.
Okay.
I'm sure it's not the governor himself.
Understood. And finally, you know, so much of what I've read about your thoughts on marijuana legislation, what I've heard you say today, is focused on the equity issue, a very important issue indeed.
Absolutely.
Of course, the other issue, well, not the only other issue, but another issue, is the fact that Connecticut stands to gained by some estimates $982 million of revenue per year from the legalization of cannabis. To what degree does that play a role in your advocacy? Do you believe that figure too?
I believe all things are possible. It may be low ball, it may be high ball. It remains to be seen. But what I will say about the revenues is, you know, some people say tomato, some people say tomato, some people say revenues, I say restitution and reparations. I mean, this money, and I think this is the rush, right? Because we all know that a lot of this money is looking to be slated into the general fund to fill budget gaps, and I don't think that is the right thing to do. This money, first and foremost, should be going back into the communities that have been harmed the most, maliciously and intentionally. Let's remember that. Cannabis was not always illegal. It was criminalized with blacks and hippies in mind. Those were the two people that Nixon's administration deemed the enemies of the White House. And in the same way we did this, we can undo it, and we need to make sure that we restore, heal those communities. And you can't talk about equity without talking about economic freedom. It has to be economic justice that leads this, because once we address economic justice, the criminal justice and the social justice and the juvenile justice, all these other ailments will be taken care of. We just need to level that playing field and put people in a position of being financially free and on a level playing field. Just undo the harm and do it in a meaningful and effective way.